Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes. This is another in our ongoing series, The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone in the literary world. My guest today is a gentleman that has led an amazing life. His new book, and actually his debut into the literary world, takes a look at one period of his life, a time when he was a test pilot. Now, how cool a job is that? I mean, as a kid, I always wanted to be a test pilot. It is my great pleasure to welcome Wayne Harding to the show. Wayne, hello, and great to talk to you again.
Thank you, Simon. This is Wayne Harding, and I'm very thrilled to be on your call.
I'd like to start with a little background. Who is Wayne Harding?
Okay. I'll be glad to do that. I'm Wayne Harding. I was born in 1921 in Fort Smith, Arkansas. I went through high school down there and spent plenty of time in the Ozarks. The summers, I worked in a glass factory, manufacturing glass, which my father and grandfather owned. I went to college at Princeton, entered June 41 in an accelerated course for engineers, and I graduated or wrote my last paper and got my diploma and exit in February of 44. And I went from, of course, I was Princeton, New Jersey. I went from Princeton to New York to an induction center, a Navy induction center. And in school, I had loved to go to ski up in the New England, and the reason I'm telling you this is it's hard to believe that I'd be this stupid, but when I went into this induction center, which was in Brooklyn, New York, I carried my skis, and the route, I'm telling you, the claps and the boos and the I think the whole induction center was turned upside down. But needless to say, I had to ship my skis home and go to Troy without them. But I went to we took a course, military training, all that stuff in Troy. And I went from Troy to Chapel Hill, North Carolina. That's a regular pre-flight for the Navy. And I went from there, from Chapel Hill to Glendale, Illinois, and where I learned to fly. I went from, that's Glenview, not Glendale. It's right north of Chicago. We learned to fly there, and we went down to Pensacola, Florida, Naval Air Station, where I became a fighter pilot in the Navy and received my commission as an ensign. And the war was over. I really wanted to get involved in the work world because everything was so excited right after we won the war, and I went to Chance Fought Aircraft, Stratford, Connecticut, as my first job, and I went there almost directly from Pensacola, although I stopped by home for about a week. And I was in Stratford a couple of years. I began with Chance Fought in February of 46, and I resigned in February of 48. And when I resigned, I went back to Fort Smith, Arkansas, and married a girl I had known all my life, but hadn't seen her much, hadn't seen her any since high school graduation. We were married in 48 and began our family in Topeka, Kansas. We lived there 16 years, had five children, and I built my first business, which was expanded to Colorado, where we moved to Denver. I founded another business. It's called Harding Steel. I still have that. That was all in 65. From 65 on, I've sort of lived here. I moved to Boulder in 94 because of my wife's illness and became semi-retired. My family, we have five children. We had five children and have them. They're all married happily. 13 grandchildren, two great-grandchildren.
And, wow.
My wife of 51 and a half years died in the year of 2000, and I've remarried. So that's where I am.
Well, Wayne, you have certainly led an illustrious life. Quick piece of math here reveals that you are 87 years old, or 87 years young.
Yeah, that's right.
Why did you wait so long to jump into the writing business? You should have done this years ago.
I know. I tell you the truth, I have been writing for about 30 years. I got interested. I had developed quite a large organization with about 40 operations in it. And back in mid-75, the country had a recession, and I contended the thing that everybody needed was salesmanship, and I wrote a book on the extra 2% that makes sales happen, not only for my branches, but for sale. And actually, I was real surprised, but it sold real well at airports. And one thing I learned when I was writing that book was that, or thought I knew, was that if you want to teach somebody, you should tell a story instead of preach to them. And Bill Daniels, who was the father of cable TV, called my book A Salesman's Bible, and I was very honored by that because Bill was a very prominent person. So really, I've been trying to write for 30 years and have had fun doing it.
Well, that's great. What persuaded you to write His Edge? Was there some moment when the idea just came to you, or you know, has it been in the back of your mind for many, many years?
Well, I think the latter. I think I wrote this novel to hold in honor two of my heroes,
right?
Dick Burroughs and Bill Millar. They were also test pilots. I wanted to show the skill and risk they represented, the integrity it took to be a good test pilot, and the joy and love in what they and I did. Our working office was God's creation. It was the sky. And it was the most thrilling 2 years, I guess, I've ever had. The camaraderie with both of them just surpassed anything that I've ever had. So my new book, book is dedicated to their families.
Right. And there's a couple of books that spring to mind. One was written by Chuck Yeager. And the other was I can't remember who wrote it, but it was about the early Apollo program. It was called The Right Stuff. And both books talk about test pilots, you know, and the fact that not too many of them live to be a ripe old age. It's a pretty dangerous game to get into.
Right. Well, Chuck Yeager is one of my heroes. Of course, I didn't know him, but he opened up the future by going through the speed of sound, and I have some data written on him in my webpage, which I'll mention later on.
Oh, that's good. How long did the book actually take to write? You know, from the moment you sat down at the keyboard or with your pad and pencil, and actually from that point to get it into print?
Well, this is hard to believe, but it's been 20 plus years. I've had 10 to 12 manuscripts. None of them worked, but I knew, you know, from the very beginning, I knew that this book would be for somebody, somewhere, sometime. And it wasn't any of my business who that person is. Just write the book for him or her. And none of these manuscripts worked. I mean, I just couldn't pull them together to say what I really wanted to say. Then my daughter, who is a retired English teacher, and her husband, a retired school administrator, volunteered to be my editors. Thereafter, it took about 1 year.
And well, congratulations to your daughter and her husband, because they have done an exceptional job of editing. His edge is billed as semi-biographic. Now, that's an interesting label, and not one that you come across very often. What is semi-biographic?
Well, I know that, and I guess I made that up because first, the events, the timing, our country's glory, and my participation in all above is correct in the book.
Right.
--, almost. It is the almost that made me feel I should label his edge fiction.
Right.
Right within those boundaries, and fiction gave me the latitude to exaggerate or minimize names, places, and some events. Not many, though, but some.
That gives me pause for thought. You know, I read, this year it'll be at least 150 books.
Wow.
Yeah, I read a lot.
Where's the book?
And I'm usually pretty good at, spotting the fiction from the fact. And
yeah.
I thought I had yours figured out, but maybe I'll have to go back to the drawing board on that one.
Yeah, you might.
You mentioned that you had previously published a book. The industry has changed a great deal since the 70s. What was your impression of the publishing industry this time around?
Oh, you know, I don't know. I sent two or three manuscripts during the 20 years. I sent them away, and they got pretty good raves, but I just didn't see how I fit in that. I didn't want to be, thinking that I was better or anything like that, but what I did this time was just forget all of that stuff. Maybe when I get through with this one, it won't work either. et cetera, et cetera. And then Lan and my and Dave, as my editors, made certain suggestions. And as a matter of fact, I had somebody to talk to, which was different, and I have to tell you, I felt inspired with parts of this book. And I would go over, I needed somebody to go over it with, and we were all on the same page, and it just, so I can't make a good comparison, I'm sorry.
That's fine. I have to say that I love to fly, and I have no idea how many hours on airplanes as a passenger. There was a 3-month period in the late 80s, or no, actually it was the early 90s, I think, where in a 3-month period I racked up 50,000 airline miles.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, all in the lower 48.
Gee whiz.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, it was fun. You know, even commercial flights can be fun if you approach them right. But without doubt, my favorite times were on smaller aircraft. For a number of years, I worked in the the oil patch in Canada. And the only way to get to some of our locations, and I'm just a computer geek, I'm not an oil patch guy, but, you know, I would need to get out there to do things with computers, and the only option were small planes, and
yeah.
Depending on the location, it was, if I was really lucky, the company owned 2 Cessna Citations, which are awesome planes.
They really are.
Right, Beechcraft was another workhorse we used. In fact, a number of other assorted planes. And I marvel at the technology. In fact, on one memorable occasion, I needed to get a computer that was the size of I guess a chest freezer. To a location in remote Alberta, and we ended up chartering a DC-3. It was the only plane available with the cargo space, and I mean it was like something out of a World War II movie. I mean, sure, the plane was more than 50 years old, but it worked great. And I love bush pilots. I mean, they're just the best folks.
Yeah, they are. They have to be.
Yeah, flying to me is a bit like a drug, and obviously, it is your drug. Reading that book, I mean, looking back, would you change anything about that period of your life?
Oh, I don't think so, really. After test piloting, I built a business out of Topeka requiring trips to and from and between many branches and our customers in small towns in all of the Midwest, Oklahoma and Kansas and Nebraska, et cetera, et cetera. My home office was in Topeka. I bought a Beechcraft Bonanza and to visit my customers and everything. I could not have done that without private air. It's it just saved me tremendous amounts of time, and I think part of my success there was that I could be a lot of places in one day and on no particular schedules. So I would say no, I wouldn't change anything.
Well, in your opinion, you know, thinking back, What was the most exciting plane that you ever flew?
Well, I really was not experienced in. I just got my fighter pilot wings in the Navy and flew the Corsair. Now I did enlist in a reserve squadron in Floyd Bennett down in New York, and flew some other kind of aircraft. But the greatest plane I'm really positive ever built, reciprocating engine, was the Corsair. It had it and the Mustang gave us superiority, and it itself, the Corsair, gave us superiority in the Pacific. So I would say the greatest plane I've ever flown, and maybe the greatest plane that anyone's ever flown, has been the F4U Corsair.
That's interesting. Did obviously you continued to fly, because you were talking about buying a Beechcraft. How long did you maintain your pilot's license for?
Oh, about 20 years.
The planes of today are a lot different from the ones you flew in the 1940s. Has the technology advancement surprised you?
Well, not when you compare it to what everything else is going on. And that was right when I started test piloting, and that's right when the major changes started taking over, because we were going from reciprocating engines to jets. And the speed of sound and barrier had been broken by Chuck, and everything was really changing, and I didn't pay much attention to that then. I just tried to keep my little Bonanza safely, and I did, and it's all flying has been positive for me throughout. So,
are you happy with the end result? Is his edge? Did it come out as you expected?
Well, I told you, I think I was inspired to really feel as though this time I was writing this for somebody, somewhere, sometime. And so I have to say yes, very, very happy. I'm very happy with my hope is that his edge will give the reader excitement and fun and a desire to live a life of integrity, loving someone with all of his or her heart, taking calculated risks, and asking for faith in God, which, when received, will furnish me and anybody that does it a roadmap through life. So I think that's the way I feel right now. I'm having a lot of fun, and I just get the feeling that it's the right book at the right time.
What kind of feedback are you getting from readers?
Well, you know, I really didn't have that on my mind, but I have been getting fabulous feedbacks. Fabulous. I mean, to my people I don't even know, and people that I know very closely, and we're not of the same beliefs spiritually, but somehow, in some way, this book sort of, instead of divides people spiritually, it sort of brings them closer together, and I've had two or three very close friends who are of different spirituality than I, that have thanked me in writing and also personally. This is where I want to be, and we do have now a new website. I want to be sure I say this too: www.hisedgethebook.com, and it gives you stories behind the story, and it's really building that I haven't had this much fun since I don't know when.
I will make sure that your website gets mentioned in the text wrap-up that
Good.
I'll be writing after the interview. And I can assure you that I, for one, will indeed be checking it out. I want to hear the story behind the story.
Yeah, there are a lot of them.
Where can people pick up copies of His Edge?
Well, online, Barnes & Noble have it, and Amazon, and then if you go to the website, you can, and you want an autograph copy, why, you can email me, and we're ready to go. In fact, we're going, and I'm having a lot of fun.
I don't have the book in front of me right at this second.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember. Did you take the print-on-demand route, or did you publish through a traditional publisher?
No, I think we didn't go through a regular publisher. There's a new deal going here down in a suburb of Denver, and that's really furnished to fabulous services. We use it.
A lot of authors are moving in that direction. There's a company that you may not ever have heard of. It's called Boca. And their business, if you will, is monitoring the world of books and assigning ISBN numbers, amongst other things.
Yeah.
And there was something like 300,000 books, new books, new titles, published in 2008.
Isn't that something?
Yeah. Trying to find a traditional publisher is next to impossible these days.
Yeah.
I'll say never met an author that stops at just one book. I met one once. Right?
Yeah.
I swear I did meet an author who said, Nope, that's it. You know, that's the only book I've got in me. I'm stopping right now. And
I just
happened to get in touch with him. It was about 6 months later, about something completely unrelated. But I happened to mention in the email, by the way, have you rethought writing another book? And he wrote back and he said, yeah, I'm writing another book.
I bet you wasn't 87.
Well, I don't think that 87 is anything to worry about. In fact, I read an absolutely fabulous book. It was about a year ago, and it was written by someone about your age, Stanley Baldwin, and it was titled The Science Was Fun, and it's all about, his book is all about the invention of radar.
Oh, wonderful.
Oh, yeah, just fabulous stuff.
Yeah.
So you dodged my question. Are you going to be writing another book?
Well, I have a sequel in my mind. I even have a draft of it, but I'm not. I certainly wouldn't start the next year or two. I really want to see if I want my message, and I don't even believe it's my message. I really have a spiritual aspect to this book that I feel that's, I don't want to say it's been my calling, but my experiences are sort of tied. I have a big family. I want my kids to to appreciate life, and I want them to be full of integrity and things that I just have to see how that goes, I think.
I honestly cannot think of a better legacy to leave than a book. You know, future generations can look back and say, that was my great-great-grandfather, that was my great-great-great-grandfather. I mean, I think it's a marvelous legacy to leave. And it also gives people an opportunity to understand a little about history. You know, history is seen through one man's eyes.
Yeah.
Well, I do want to thank you, and I also wish that before we went on air, I had made a bet with you about the 30 minutes.
I was thinking about that. I was thinking, I should never take on a pro like you, you know.
Oh, I'm not a pro, but I have been around the block.
Yeah, I know, an experience. No, I mean, another thing I think this book is, my family feels good about it, you know, so I just, I really appreciate the invitation to talk to you and tell you some of these things, so God bless you very much.
And I want to really thank you for, number one, writing the book, and number two, taking the time to talk to us here at Blogger News. And I'm sure I speak for everyone at Blogger News in wishing you every success with His Edge. I do hope that you will write another book, a sequel, if you will, and I do hope that I will get to read it. And I also wish you a very, very long and illustrious life. Let's hope we can talk again in 20 years.
Okay, Simon. you've been very gracious, and I really appreciate it.
This is Simon Barrett for Blogger News. I really want to thank Wayne Harding. It's been a wonderful show. I wish it could have gone on longer. We will be back with another show on Sunday, our regular news talk radio show. So I'm sure I'll bump into a lot of our listeners then. This is Simon Barrett saying thank you and have a wonderful afternoon. Goodbye.